operation with pieces of leased land, and we found them where we could, and they were scattered quite far, and we would go a distance if that land was fertile and could contribute to our farm operation of sweet corn and strawberries and green beans and so forth. Now, the reason that this the $20,000 test is so important is because there are two ways of getting marginal land. One is the ranch, and I think other people can speak to the eastern southern Oregon concepts of the poor land quality, but when I think of the small ownership criteria, then I know lots of 20 and 15 and 17 acre parcels that are part of major operations, major commercial operations, that produce a lot more than 20,000 gross. And I think just because we're going with a small ownership test also, and that does affect some very fertile class 2 soils, class 1 possibly also, class 1, 2, 3 soils, then it's very important that that land not be removed from farm operation. I just asked my husband last evening after I went home from participating in the work session whether he had a map of an area where we farm in North Albany, and he pulled out a copy of an assessor's map, and you can't see very much from here, but our strawberries that are over there came from a small piece like this, you know, fit in among some subdivisions which should not have occurred, but occurred well before land use planning. And those parcels put together are a very important part, not only of the Carnegie operation, but of commercial agriculture that surrounds the urban areas. It surrounds Albany and Corvallis, and I would guess it surrounds Salem also. When you get further away from the city, you have less problems there.
Representative Hill and then Representative Trahan.
I believe Representative Trahan was first, Madam Chair. I'll wait.
No, I had you on your list earlier from your last question.
Whoever gets called first is first.
Okay. Lois, strawberries are a pretty intensive crop, but not all crops could operate on a 15 or 20 acre parcel. Probably in eastern Oregon, we wouldn't have that kind of situation as we do in Willamette Valley. And the same thing, southern Oregon, probably we wouldn't have that situation. Things like grapes and strawberries and these intensive
beans,
high
sweet
yield,
corn, mint.
That's where this was a question I was trying to lead up to before. These small parcels on good soil still could be part of a very productive operation, even though they're little bitty parcels. And I'm worried that we may be eliminating a lot of good farmland, even though it's a small parcel among a parcelized area.
Representative Hill, you have put your finger on a great concern of farmers, and at the same time we were drafting an ag for, I mean, the ag Agrarian was drafting this bill. This was a...
Excuse me.
Listen to the question after you answer.
This was, your concern is very well stated, because it really does concern us. Again, we have a bean field that we just rented beginning this year, and it includes a parcel of 1.44 acres plus another one of 2.91 acres plus another one of 20.71 acres, as I read the notes here. Mm-hmm. There are two different ownerships, but in those tiny parcels, and it's all put together and farmed as one bean field.
Now, if the owner of that field canceled your lease, sat on the land for 3 years, suddenly that would be non-productive land.
No.
By this definition.
No, Representative Hill, that is exactly why we put in a 1983 point in time there, because it was not part of a farm operation that produced $20,000 or more in gross income in 3 of the 5 years preceding the effective date of this 1983 Act. And if, as I answer that, I may also answer Elizabeth Sampson's comment of a little while ago of what if there is land out there that hasn't been farmed in the last few years, which fits that whole category there. I would like to say that I think the farm economy has been, up until now, on our side. I would guess, as the downturn has come in farm dollars and farm operations, you may see land going out of production that has been in production. But by and large, I don't know of much class 1, 2, 3 soil, 4 soil, that hasn't been produced. There has been a tremendous competition among farmers to lease land. I can think of just one parcel that I know of, again, in this North Albany neighborhood, of an old filbert orchard that the owner didn't take care of, and so therefore that hasn't been produced. More recently, somebody has said, oh, I'll clean it up, and so he's put together an operation from several old filbert orchards and is cleaning up and working them. But that kind of thing, the old orchards, I guess, would be the kind of parcels that might possibly have just been left sit. But other than that, I can't think of much land that hasn't been operated.
Hector, We've got Representative Trahan and Representative Few. Hector would like to come up and talk about something that pertains to this that Representative Van Leeuwen's been trying to get. Representative Trahan?
Ms. Kinnegy, you've been talking about your 5, 10, 20-acre parcels that are that you're raising strawberries or sweet corn or beans mm-hmm. or mint or mm-hmm. some of those kinds of products on. Generally speaking, and I recognize it will vary some, but generally speaking, what would those soil classes be if you're raising those kinds of crops?
It would be the 1, 2, 3, 4 soils. Basically, we farm mostly 1, 2, 3 soils. And you see, the problem is that in our marginal lands definition, we don't have any problem when you talk about that being class 5 through 8. It's not going to come in that way. What we're concerned about is that if there's no income test, that then it could come in under the small parcelization way. You see, if you take away the income test, then there's no way that those parcels could be kept out of marginal lands, and each of those then, by virtue of just being in existence and having been legally created, would therefore have a vested right for a home site, and so you would increase the number of buildings in the agricultural community, in the agricultural areas. And that is one of the things that farmers are concerned about.
Mr. Chairman, one more.
Representative Trahan.
If instead of worrying about the income tax test, we were to take away the possibility of the 1 through 4 class soils being in the marginal land, would we be accomplishing the same purpose that you're concerned about?
Well, you know, that is an interesting question, Representative Trahan, and I would really like to, it's one that frankly I had not thought about until someone else raised it privately this afternoon, and I would really like to go back to our Ag for Oregon group of farmers and bounce that one around. The reason the parcelization test came was because there has been concern from Washington County, from Clackamas County, from the counties that are particularly in the areas outside Portland saying, this land is parcelized. We can't farm it. We want to have it marginal lands. And there has been, as you perhaps know, Washington County has been in dispute with LCDC and I believe Thousand Friends also in relationship to some controversial area that has already broken up. And so when we were trying to figure out what we could do to meet some of the problems which have occurred in land use planning in the last 10 years, some of the questions have been raised and people say, well, it's not fair. Here's this parcelized area. We can't do anything with it. Then we included the two tests. But possibly the session legislature may just decide to go in the Poor Lands Act. I don't know. It's a good question, and I'd like to spend some time with other farmers discussing that before I give a... Thank you for raising it.
Hector, you want to get into this fight? Now's your chance.
You came at a good time. Hector McPherson. I really, it's to you, Representative Anderson, that I'm speaking, because I wanted to take, the committee was thrown out by Representative Van Leeuwen, that we ought to take a look at Peterson Butte. And since that time, I've had an opportunity to look at Peterson Butte, and I think it brings out the very topic that you've been interested in, and I think it that perhaps if I present that and show the problems there are in Peterson Butte and what might happen there, it might be of some interest to you. Now, this, I went first, it took me about 2 hours to get the kind of information you'd need to find out whether there were poor soils in a given area of Linn County, that is, that might need our marginal lands test. This happens to be, and you can't see too much from there, but you can see that this happens to be a butte, and this bare area down here happens to be the south side, or the southwest corner of the butte that is not forested. Now, over here, you see some bare land, but that's farmland. That's the reason that's bare land. Most of the rest of that is timbered land, and it's pretty poor-looking stuff. So I simply got this map, which has all the soil series on it, and I mapped out which were class 6 and above. And when I took that same map that you're looking at, and I took the class 6, now this is all non-farmland. This is class 6.
Something down here.
Sorry. And on your head? Thank you. The yellow area here shows that these are all the class 6 and 8 soils on there. There are a few rock piles out there that go as class 8, but the rest of this is, none of this is farmland. Really, most of that is not being farmed at all, but it is completely surrounded by quite good farmland. And so then the next test was, well, is this good forest land? So then I got a hold of the farm forester, Mr. Rick Fletcher, who handles Linn and Benton counties, to ask him, well, now, what on Peterson Butte would be marginal by our test of 85 cubic feet per acre? And he said, well, what are the significant? We did all this by phone, so I can't vouch for the 100% accuracy of it, but he thought this was pretty accurate. And we identified that there is Dixonville, Whitsville, and Paloma for the basic three soil series that run in this area in this yellow that I talked about. Well, of those, he said the Paloma undoubtedly qualifies as marginal land. You tend to find that on the south slopes. It's thin soil. And because, he said, the best test of these buttes is whether it naturally grows timber. If there's no natural timber on there, it probably is pretty darn low. So anyway, we identified that which was, by his designation, would be marginal land. In other words, would not grow 85 cubic feet of timber per year. We came up with an area there that you see in green along superimposed in the yellow, and it's about, I can't tell you exactly, but between 200 and 300 acres. Okay, so now we got 200 or 300 acres there. Let's just say it's 250 acres. By our 50% rule, there's about 500 acres that could be lumped into any single block if Linn County chose to do it, to identify whether it really would fit or not. But now we get down to that critical thing, and this is what I can't really tell you about. I did go in with Mr. Gloge. We looked at the size of parcels on Peterson Butte, and they tend to be rather large. Obviously, those that go down into the valley floor probably are part of a farm operation that's making over $20,000, so that some of that might be excluded because it was like that. But they're not doing much with that up there, and so now we get down to the thing that you people are wrestling with. Do you say not part of? Do you say makes a significant contribution? Or there is a third way, which is not good from our standpoint, but is a kind of an in-between thing. Does it make any contribution? If they're not doing anything with it, but even it's still owned by the same guy that's farming down at the foot, it could come in. If he really is grazing that, in other words, if it's part of a grazing operation and he's grazing it, then it's making a contribution. But you don't have to argue about whether it's significant or not. It seemed to me that there is definitely marginal land out here in Linn County and probably in every county in Western Oregon that's kind of like that. And if it's in an area that's surrounded by good farmland, you're going to find a problem with some of it running down onto the valley floor and being part of an operation that's bigger. Now, of course, we don't like that because it works two ways. It gets to the point where you get to arguing about whether this is making any contribution or not. And it's much easier to simply rule it all out. But I think that's what the committee needs to make their policy decision on, whether any of that needs to go in. Whether, if you want to rule it all out, I'm sure that Ag for Oregon would be very happy. But there is another route there. I might add one more piece of information with regard to poor land in the Willamette Valley. And there again, I'm going to talk about Linn County because that's the one I got the data on. According to the commercial forest land cubic foot site ownership classes in Linn County, in the farmer and miscellaneous private ownerships, that's only, there are 22,000 acres that fit the class, the less than class than 85 cubic feet. So we're talking that's about 10% of the total farmer-owned forest land in Linn County that would come under the test of 85 cubic feet. So we have, you know, there's quite a lot of acres out there that can come in as marginal land, even in Western Oregon, by this test. But the part that I really thought you ought to hear about was to see the problem posed by Peterson Butte if the ownership's run down onto the grass seed area, which is part of the operation.
Chairman? Where are we next? Representative Priestley and Representative Parkinson and then Representative Van Leeuwen.
I want to come back to Hector's comments, but first I wanted to ask Mr. Benner, you mentioned about reading this study that was made of the Polk and so many counties and some other counties as to the sizes of the farms, and Mrs. Carnegie has spoken about her aggregation of leased home and owned land. What was the name of the study?
It's written by a fellow by the name of Van Otten, O-T-T-E-N.
O?
O-T-T-E-N.
And his first name is what?
I can't remember his first name. His last name is Van Otten.
Oh, Van Otten.
And it's called Spatial Expressions of Farmland Sizes in Polk and Linn Counties. I can get a copy of it for you if you're interested.
Okay, yeah, I'd like to read it. Now, would you tell us now, what did that say? What was it saying about the sizes or...
It was describing the tendency in those two counties, and assuming, and probably in all parts of the Willamette Valley, that principally in field crops, wheat, grass seed, etc., there is a tendency for them to be in not one contiguous block, but in scattered parcels, a single operation with scattered parcels. And as I recall, the mean distance between and among those parcels was about 7.5 miles. And there's also something like 43% of the operators commercial operators lease at least a portion of the land that they farm.
What percent?
43.
Mm-hmm. And so 43% of the operators, and they probably have over half of the ground. Would you not? Is that not fair to say?
They own it?
Well, 43% of the operators is probably more than 43% of the ground that they have.
That I don't recall, that statistic.
I guess I'm wondering here, and who is the typical leasee, I guess? My hunch is we keep thinking in terms of one farmer leasing property to another farmer, but that probably isn't the typical case. Maybe Mrs. Carnegie, you could speak to who are the people that you the kinds of people that you are leasing from? I suspect they're rather city people and maybe professional doctors or something live in Portland.
Some of them are sons and daughters of farmers, grandchildren of farmers, widows of farmers.
Oh.
I'm just trying to think of those other. We're leasing right now from a dairy operator where his banker told him he'd better concentrate on the cows and let somebody else farm the land. Mostly elderly people or descendants of farmers.
For example, Representative Priestley, my brother owns what used to be our family farm. He doesn't operate it. He leases it to another neighbor.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair?
Well, you've got a list here. Representative Parkinson.
Yeah, a question of Mr. McPherson. You identified, or said you had identified, about 20,000 acres of timberland in Linn County that could be defined as marginal.
This is the statistics that have been provided to us, yes, that there are 20,000 acres that seem to fit that category.
Now, the question is, when you define it, if you applied an income test to the 20,000 acres, how much would be left?
I'm afraid I can't answer that. I'm sure that hasn't been done, and I don't think anyone really can answer that at this point. But when you get into this very low-quality stuff, and I can speak with a little more assurance about Peterson Butte, because it's really not managed as commercial operations at all. So I don't think any of it would be lost on Peterson Butte because of the timber management. Most of it's just oak, and maybe a little firewood's taken off, but beyond that, there's not much as commercial.
Thank you.
Representative Van Leeuwen.
Madam Chairman, and again to Hector McPherson, looking at Peterson's Butte and looking at the bill, and I don't know which draft or what you've got of the bill, but looking at of the B engrossed version on page 2, the first section there on the page, it says that the land did not make a significant contribution, thinking of Peterson's Butte, which it didn't. The end of line 3 says, and the land is either, and then you have either or. Would not that land fit under the second or, located in an area of not less than 100 acres composed predominantly of soils and capability of classes 4 through 5 through 8 in the agriculture capability classification system, etc., and not capable of producing 85 or more cubic feet of merchantable timber. So if you would take that, you said it was about 250 acres, I believe, to 300 acres. According to this bill and that, then that area on the south slope of Peterson's Butte could be classed as marginal lands, right, according to the bill.
Yes, Representative Van Doen, not only that, but because we have a 50% thing, it says predominantly, so that you could include some additional land along with that if the planners thought that was appropriate, and make it even larger than that. The only thing that you are not taking into consideration is the fact that some of that land may be in ownerships of people that are in the grass seed business down at the foot of the mountain and actually have an ongoing thing that makes more than $20,000. The way the bill is drafted here now, the ones that own land up to Butte, but we're also had a significant grass seed operation at the foot of it, might be ruled out by the income test.
Okay, a further continuation of that, then would you be willing to change the bill so it put them in the same category as the other owners on that butte who are not in that area? I mean, the other owners on the butte who are not in agricultural operations?
I suggested that the committee had three options there from which they should choose, and although I have to be philosophically on the side that I would really not, I would like to keep all of these out, I think the committee could make the choice that that you, rather than significant contribution, if you just use the term contribution,
sure,
you've eliminated at least half of the litigation you're likely to get, and probably you could live with that. And I have, I'll rest on that without really identifying that philosophically, of course, I don't want to keep all the land I can out of in the productive sphere. And I want to keep all the controversy. I think I'm doing everybody a favor if we can avoid litigation. You avoid more litigation by going to the not part of than if you allow either significant contribution or just contribution.
Madam Chair?
Representative Troop, finally. Second time around.
Yeah, no, that's... I think we shouldn't... I guess I want to remind myself that I shouldn't lose perspective and keep in mind that we're trying to take land that currently is probably marginal land, that we're advocating trying to find out some procedure for allowing that for additional development or other kinds of uses. Frankly, I'm very concerned about that procedure. I think I'd just as soon turn around and walk away and remain with the status quo, but I guess I'm open to discussing a little if there is a way that we can open up some marginal lands. I'm concerned about the breadth of our activity. And I think what I'd like to do is really get back to the bill, see what agreements were made yesterday or see what the perspective was of that group that was meeting, move through the bill. If there are some decisions that we can make, begin to make those decisions. I think we have to keep in mind that we're talking about taking the status quo and broadening it. And I guess my particular feeling is I would participate in helping to broaden that status quo, but if we're talking about opening it up completely or getting too broad, that's the point where I guess I begin to lose interest and would like to just see the thing set aside altogether. But I am very willing to look at broadening that standard, opening up some of those lands, and I'd really like to get to moving through the bill to see see if it's even possible, if we can figure out a way to do it that we can all agree on. If not, maybe we ought to just go back to the status quo.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think Hector has at least made a start. When we say the land does not make a contribution, I think that eliminates grazing. Again, you got to come back to significant, I guess, in a way, but when you say it doesn't make a contribution, there shouldn't be much litigation over that. To me, that's a rock pile that's really not grazing land. I don't know how we can identify a grazing land, but I'd certainly be willing to make a stab at identifying grazing land. Now, Douglas County is the largest sheep producer in the state of Oregon, and that's what Douglas County is timber and grazing. The number of soil farmers that make a full-time living in Douglas County can be counted on my two hands. So that's where our problem is, similar to yours in Deschutes County. And so I think that's where we are. If you eliminate... If grazing makes a contribution, somewhere in there you got to define what grazing land is. Otherwise, you don't have any marginal land. But that might be a way to attack it.
Representative Van Leeuwen.
To continue on with Peterson's Butte, and I'm sorry to belabor over Peterson's Butte, but it's a good example in the Willamette Valley. If part of that is in smaller ownerships and was bought by people, in other words, was a lot of record, whatever a lot of record is now, prior to the date of this bill, or prior to fitting into some other dates that we have somewhere floating around in the lot of record bill, would that be buildable with this, what we've got proposed here? Could they build on that? There are some people in town who have some smaller acreages out there on Peterson Butte. I'm not sure whether it's on the south side. I'm not sure which side it's on.
Madam Chair, put me on your list.
The question I was directed to me was...
Yes, please.
Yeah, well, now, we assume first that it has to be designated as marginal land.
If it is owned by people that are not doing anything with it, obviously that can come in as marginal land, and they would be able to build on it. If it's a lot of record, they could put one house on every lot on Peterson Butte if it's declared marginal land, the part that they own their property on. But the thing that we started to discuss was whether the people who were genuine farmers that owned land that ran up on the Butte, whether they could do the same, and there was a feeling there was unfairness there, because if it was part of their operation, they couldn't. But you're absolutely right.
Well, I'm interested in that part too.
Yes.
But I was just asking the second part.
No, you're absolutely right that a lot of that land on Peterson Butte, I suspect, but I can't say for sure, is owned by people that are not genuine farmers and it's not making a contribution, and therefore the $20,000 test or the discussed $10,000 test for forestry operations would not be any limitation. They could build.
Representative Parkinson and then Representative Tripp.
Mine isn't a question. I think it's a question of chair. I feel we're getting hung up so bad on marginal. Do you think we maybe ought to go on and
well, that's
good parts of the bill?
I want to go through. I'm going to say one thing, and we have gotten.
That's what you wanted, was marginal.
Representative Parkinson, we have gotten off the track. The fact is, and I think Beth can relate this from yesterday.
Sorry,
that's all right. We have gotten off of the language, but I think the goal is in this bill is to open up some lands to marginal lands, and I think some county people that have problems with this want that to happen too, and I think many members of this committee want that to happen, and it's a matter of defining it so it'll work. And one of the things I'm going to ask to do, I'm going to make a couple of stop right now before Representative Troop talks and make a couple of announcements and make some requests of some people. And I see Gordon Foltz, did he leave?
He'll be back.
Well, I need to, is he coming right in? Is he just outside? Yes, please.
When's that committee going to meet again?
Monday morning.
What time?
Ask Beth. She's taking care of it. It's a matter of defining it. I would like, and I'm going to wait for Gordon to make the second announcement. I'll make one other announcement first. We will be having a work session on this on Monday. We will take a break from this bill and hear 405 on Wednesday and go back to this again on Friday. There were a couple of things that they discussed in that when some of the groups got together to see if they could reach some agreement on some of this. On the parcelization, they were talking about using a radius as opposed to using the language in here. And going either by a radius or by
quarter sections,
some of that. And what I think it would be real helpful for this committee to see when looking at this test to see if it actually works. I would like over the weekend or Monday morning or whatever for Gordon to see if you can get a planner from maybe some diverse counties, Eastern Oregon, Southern Oregon, Valley,
Tri-County,
to, and use the, I don't know if you can do it, but to take this test or a couple different methods of doing it, if you use the income test, using what Washington County recommended, which was the data from Oregon State Extension Service on the income, using the parcelization test, and I assume counties, don't you have classification of soils in your counties? And seeing what we can put together so you can take a board up there and say, does this work or doesn't it work? Because we're sitting here sort of fumbling through the language, now what if this happens and what if this happens, and we're looking at all the ways you can get around the language. And I guess we have to quickly make some decisions on if it's part of over here, if it's kind of for here, that kind of thing. I think there's pretty well agreement that you eliminate significant, because if you eliminate significant, you eliminate a lot of litigation. But it would be helpful for the committee to see, how does this work in actual practice? And does it work in actual practice? And I think we need to have that for Monday's meeting. And you've got all weekend.
Madam Chair.
Ron, is there anyone from LCDC that can help do any of this? Do you have planners on your staff that can help do that?
Monday morning.
They hired somebody. I think we could work with the counties and
Dick, do you have some? Is there any way that you can put that together by Monday so we can see how this works in actual practice? We don't want you to do the whole state. We want you to take a, you know.
Just tell them.
Dick's got some already.
Just tell them.
Yeah, don't ask them.
Speed you.
But you might.
For sure.
Sure.